We're going to begin our council meeting tonight. I am Mayor Protem Higgins Paul, I'm sitting in for a meeting tonight. He is going to be with us shortly as a member of a high school recognition achievement this year. So he'll be with us as soon as that is finished. We're going to start off our meeting by having the invocation given by Councilmember Paul. And the pledge will be led by Chairman Gould.
Dear Father in heaven, we come together as city leaders and residents and to discuss issues that are presented to the city this time. And we're thankful for our freedoms. We're thankful for the opportunities we have to run our cities the way we feel is best. And we're thankful for all the blessings that we have. And bless us today that we can be respectful of each other and that we can do the best we can to make good choices for the city that will help its residents and help those that are, all that are involved. And we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen.
We have you, please rise. This is the Pledge of Allegiance after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first thing that we have on our agenda tonight is to approve the meeting's agenda. So I'll accept the motion for that.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Right, next, we have a time that has been set aside for public comments. Now, we have two chances for the public comments tonight. One is a general public comment, in which you'd like to comment on any issue that's not before us already. And then the second is for a public hearing. And we'll have a public hearing on four separate items that you'll see moved on the agenda. One is for the Lakeview Trail subdivision, the next for the Rosegate Congregate Care Facility, an issue regarding swapping some of the sub-district areas, amendments to our city code.
Xeriscaping, and finally some water and sewer fund transfers. So the plan is that right now we'll take any public comments not on those four items, and then we'll go through each of those four items in order in the public hearing, where we'll welcome anybody who would like to speak on those topics. Okay. So Chandler has brought me the sign-up sheet. Thank you. So I have four people signed up for general, for public comment on one sheet and two on another. So let me ask, are any of you here wanting to give general public comment on items not for the public hearings? And I see one hand raised, two hands raised. So why don't you come up in whichever order you prefer. Come up and state your name, give your address at the podium here, and then you've got 3 minutes to give your public comment.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Robert Silva, and I live at 4612 Apple Blossom Circle in Cedar Hills here. And I'd like to address this mainly towards the city manager. We received a notice about a speed bump sign that is being covered by our tree. Well, the tree went in way before this speed bump sign. And if we cut that back to where they can see it, we're going to really basically just take the whole tree out. And it is a beautiful tree. And we were just wondering what it would hurt for the city to move that sign back about 3 foot or so where it's in front of it, instead of us having to cut that tree out, because it is like an evergreen. And if we cut all the branches away from it, it will kill the tree. So it'd basically be better just for me to go in there and play lumberjack. But it's not only that, it's around our area there, a lot of the stop signs, a lot of the speed bump signs are being blocked by other trees and bushes. A lot of times you have to pull out onto 46th before you can see if anything's coming either way. And we were just, you know, really just wondering what, if the city could actually move their sign a couple of feet instead of us having to go in there and cut it out. And anybody's welcome to drive by there and see, or drive around our neighborhood and see how everything is obstructed by all other trees and bushes, you know. So, hated to take up your time, but I sure do appreciate it. And I thank you all kindly.
Thank you. Appreciate your comment. We'll have a discussion with our city staff about that issue.
My name is David Cox. I live at 4684 West, 9980 North. I'd like to talk about the Rosegate development that's just to the north of where my house is. And this isn't related to the expansion into the residential or the retail district specifically. So I have only lived in Cedar Hills for just under a year. I lack a little bit of background as the whole development's progressed. But I was initially opposed to the development in general. For purely selfish reasons, I really like my view out my backyard, and a three-story building would entirely kill that. But seeing as how my views are shared by many in the community, I decided I should hold to my views, because I live so close to it, I thought it was my responsibility to express them here. I don't know the position of any of the council members, but I have a general impression that the city finds itself in somewhat of a helpless position. And so my comments today are to address ways in which the city is not helpless and potentially ways that we can make better use of that land. We all know that it is the mixed-use office retail zone that's being considered. We know that the developments there should be lower intensity in scale, size, and height when compared with the full retail zone. Wow, this is going to take longer than I expected. I'll cut to the chase. Okay. We have in section 3.2 of the commercial development guidelines that the city shall impose any and all conditions they find necessary to protect the integrity and quality of the master planned area or the surrounding neighborhoods. This is not limited to conditions that are specifically suggested inside the development guidelines, but as it says later on, any conditions may be applied to any permitted or conditional use, of which assisted living is conditional, at the discretion of the Planning Commission and or City Council. It is my belief that there are some conditions that we have asked for that have not been met, specifically being the height of the building. Two stories is preferred in the development guidelines. And even more specific than that, the 30-foot limit is vast, that the City Council may extend that, not that they must extend that if the building is further offset from residential and street uses. I have more, but my time is brief. And I do have comments related to specifically the neighborhood retail expansion for later on. Thank you.
Okay. Would you mind emailing us your whatever you put together, because I'd like to know the rest of your thoughts?
Sure. Is there a specific email address that I should use?
You can, if you go to cedarhills.org, and then under the government that says mayor and council, you'll find all of our email addresses right
there.
Okay,
so just individuals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, that was what I was going to suggest. I'd love to hear the rest of what you have to say, or if you stick around tonight, I'm happy to chat with you after the meeting. Okay, any other public comments that are not related to one of the four public hearing items on our agenda? I'm seeing a hand here and a hand here. Two more people that like to speak. No.
I would just like to know when a decision would be made regarding this, because we've got fines coming up if we don't do something. I'd just like to know when we need to take care of this.
Regarding the tree. We'll have a talk with our city manager and see if we can get that resolved as soon as possible.
Will you let us know?
Yes.
Because I have asked about, you know, whether the sign can be moved before, knowing that from the city of Rabat, back in touch.
I understand. This is the first I've heard of it. So we'll, after the meeting tonight, I intend to have a chat and we'll see what we can do. Mr. Cromar.
Hi, my name is Ken Cromar, 9870 North Meadow Drive, Cedar Hills. Last city council meeting 2 weeks ago, a group of us from Cedar Hills Citizens for Responsible Government signed up, and we all spoke in turn regarding Kim Hollandrake and her 6 years of retirement that she had not yet received and that had actually been compromised away from her. And we had asked if we could hear from the council, and to my knowledge, none of us have. I was wondering if there's been any development that is there somebody who might be handled I could talk with afterwards?
I've actually done some research and sent the city council some information on that. Would be happy to sit down with you and show you what we found.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if this is the right time, but I'd like to give you that information.
That would be great. And it's probably not right now, but later we can chat. Is that
super.
All right, David?
Thank
sure.
You.
Appreciate that.
Yes, and we also need to check with our legal counsel because this may be regarding an employee or a past employee, and so we need to be sure we have that.
And that's
handled
understood.
Properly.
And yet so much of it was public, and there was a very onerous unenforceable contract that she was forced to sign with just a couple of hours before a city council meeting where she was told she was going to be fired if she didn't sign. This is a 20-year veteran who had just been elected as the president of the Utah Recorders Association. And we are so gratified, Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government, that there's a new attorney in town, so to speak, and that we're anxious to see a new start and happy to try to work. This is just something that from the past that we think makes great sense to use as footing for starting anew. Shifting gears real fast, on a related item, in the news there's been a lot of talk of Hillary Clinton and her emails, and it was just on a news report as I was driving over, and how so many of them were destroyed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that there was a contract that she was supposed to sign as she left office, declaring unequivocally that she had provided back to the government all the records that were in her possession. Well, she's already admitted she's destroyed some, but that brought to mind something that we've posted on our website, cedarhillcitizens.org, requesting the council that they be sure to consider requesting the previous attorney of many years to sign a similar affidavit that would declare that he had actually provided back to the city all the documents that were in his possession, and declaring that he had not destroyed anything inappropriately and that he had obeyed the law without question. My guess is that he could and should be able to sign that, assuming he's honest, and we have no reason to believe that he isn't, per se, though we question some of the decisions. But I think that would make great sense to have accomplished by the city, and it before he gets his final paycheck, it would seem appropriate to do that, just in the interest of protecting the citizens and our records. And appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you. Last call for that was my timer. Last call for any additional public comment. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close that portion of our meeting. And now we'll move on to our public hearing that we have planned. So we're going to cover these issues one by one, as we stated. So the first issue is regarding final plans for Lakeview Trails subdivision, located at approximately 10100 Canyon Road in the H1 Hillside Zone. So do we have any residents who would like to speak to that particular issue? Or anybody who would like to speak on this, please come forward. And just state your name and your address. And
My name is Wayne Windsor. I'm the engineering and maintenance manager for the Metropolitan Water District of Salt Lake and Sandy. My business address is 3430 East Danish Road, Cottonwood Heights. I'm here to make a brief comment. It's been very pleasurable to be working with Mr. Wilson on the development, but we do believe there's one area that has been yet resolved, and that's the stormwater runoff from the east side of the Salt Lake Corridor to the west side of the corridor. We believe whatever action that the city council takes tonight, that it be subject to the stormwater, 100-year stormwater runoff from the east be continuous to the west, that there not be any impoundment or retainage or detention within the corridor. Other than that, I have no other comments unless you have any questions of the district. Seeing none, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Okay, next is a public hearing item on decision to allow the proposed congregate care facility, Rosegate at Cedar Hills, located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive, to traverse the neighborhood retail development and the mixed-use office retail development sub-districts of the SC1 commercial zone. So do we have anybody who would like to speak to that particular item on our agenda? I'm seeing one hand, two hands. Okay, so Mr. Cox, would you like to come up first, and then Mr. Shute?
Yeah, along the, again, I'm David Cox, 4684 West, 9980 North, directly to the south of the proposed Rosegate development. These are directed specifically at the neighborhood retail expansion. From the development guidelines, I quote the Well, not quite yet, but the purpose of this subdistrict, the neighborhood retail subdistrict, is, quote, to promote a combination of retail and service facilities that in character and scale are necessary to meet the day-to-day needs of area residents. The Rosegate, as I understand it, is not intended to satisfy that need. It's not intended to help the current residents, but instead to bring in additional residents. Conversely, though, I am not ignorant of the fact that that land will be developed, and the plans that I have seen most recently leave a little bit to be desired in terms of form. And if expansion into that zone will help the Rosegate development improve the look and feel of the building that they have proposed, I would be in favor if the Rosegate development is going to proceed forward, which I would like not to happen. Thank you.
Okay, so I will recognize Mayor Gigi has stepped back in and taken control of the gavel away from me, and so the meeting is his.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that, and appreciate your indulgence. I had to honor some of our high school students this evening, that I like to do, so I'm back. So we're on public hearing?
We're on the public hearing, and we are on specifically item 5, which is the Rosegate amendments, and so we have Mr. Shoup, who is signed up next, to offer comment on that item.
Do you have a list?
Yes.
Mr. Shoup.
Thank you. I'll just take a few minutes. I thought it might be beneficial to give just a little bit of background on this. And generally, I don't do it during the public comment portion, but the Rosegate development is, well, let me back up a little bit. There was I represent the developer and have been working with him and the Planning Commission and City Council for quite some time. And during our last Planning Commission meeting, when we submitted our preliminary site plan review, we met all of the guidelines and the development guidelines and standards, as well as the code. So we're very familiar with what Mr. Cox is referring to. And part of what happened during that Planning Commission meeting was, although we met all of the requirements, there was a desire from the Planning Commission for us to look at exactly what Mr. Cox was just asking, and that is, if the development was able to overlap into the subzone neighborhood retail, the end result may be beneficial. And so that's where we're at, and we're attending tonight really to do what we've done many times in the past, and that is hear comments like Mr. Cox, so that we can take those comments into consideration and see what it is we can do to accommodate and implement any of the public's comments and concerns. So we've tried desperately to do that over the last 2 years, and we're hoping to hear more tonight. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shoup. Okay. Mr. Fox has signed off on this. He's spoken both instances. Mr. Smith has already spoken.
That's why I think he's going down the list of issues so we're keeping them aware of the issue.
So, Mr. Windsor? Wayne Windsor? You want to speak?
We've heard from him. We've heard from him.
So all you have is this person. I hope I say this name right. Ken Hazelbaker. Is that correct?
Item number 7, sir.
Got you.
He wants to speak.
Water and sewer transfers.
Yes, sir.
So I've been going through and order. We did 4, we're doing 5 now. And so I've been asking, is there anything on 5? Is there anything on 6? And so he's waiting for us to call.
Okay. So on item number 5, is anyone else wanting to speak on Rosegate? Okay. Next item, number 6, amendment to City Code Title 10 regarding landscaping, xeriscaping. Is anybody wanting to speak on that item? Okay. Now number 7, water and sewer fund transfers out of the governmental funds to cover related water and sewer charges for FY 2014-2015 and FY 2015-2016. Is anybody wanting to speak on that particular issue? Michelle Hazelbaker, if you'd like to come forward, please.
Council, my name is Ken Hazelbaker.
If you'd state your address as well, please.
Yes. I live at 10253 North Oak Road West. Still don't have that memorized. We've only lived there about 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. New to Cedar Hills. Moved up here last June. We enjoy the community a lot. So this is my first attendance at your city council meeting. Grateful for the opportunity that you opened up for public comment. I'm a civil engineer background, graduate of Utah State. Got 10 of our 12 grandkids live around here, so we're vested in this interest. We're going to be here a long time. For what it's worth, we bought Reed Swenson's home and live there. Okay? So, anyway, we've got some friends around here, and we talk a little bit. And personally, I'm a little bit surprised to see a golf course in a desert community when there's 2 other golf courses real close. But that's not what this issue is about directly. I'm just trying to learn. I haven't had time to catch up and understand how to look over your shoulders and work with you. But I don't quite understand why we're transferring funds. If this is something, does it happen every 2 budget years or whatever? Is this a normal fiscal thing, or is this an emergency thing that is happening? And how much of it is going to help the golf course, and how much is just for other things? I just wanted to understand some of the background behind the reason for this action having to happen.
Okay. Let me explain a little bit about public comments. And,
okay.
And so typically this is not a time for question and going back and forth.
Okay.
But I'm going to answer your question in the sense that we are going to talk about the water and sewer transfers in the meeting. And I would say if that doesn't make sense to you, then I would set up a time to speak with our finance director, who'd be happy. But essentially, we're complying with the law.
Okay.
And so there's never been myself as the mayor or any of the council members that have gone to the finance director and say, move funds here from there, or move funds from one place to another. So our finance director, who's very accomplished, is accommodating the law, which does change from time to time. So I think he's going to give a really good explanation of why that's going to take place.
Thank you. Because all I saw was just a little blurb in your newsletter, and I wanted to understand more. So thank you.
Happy to do it. Thank you. Okay. So unless I missed someone who wanted to sign up and did not, then I think that has accomplished all of our public comments and public hearings. Last chance. Anybody wanting to speak that has not? If not, then I'm going to close the public hearings part of our meeting and move on to city reports and business. So, starting from my left, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start off, and then we'll go down the row.
Great. Thank you. The Timpanogos Special Service District is going to meet this Thursday, so I'll be able to get some more information from that meeting and bring it back to the council. Just a couple things with regards to the Recreation Department. Our teen soccer playoffs with American Fork finished this Thursday. It's been a great season, very successful for a teen program. We've had a lot of rain lately, as you have all known, so we've had a few games canceled. But a lot of the kids like playing in the rain and in the wet, so there were a few games played in the rain. We've been working out an agreement with Lone Peak Volleyball to set up some clinics for volleyball starting next month, and that will be administered through Lone Peak. We'll be meeting with Principal Bromley next month to also talk about some more partnerships with the high school that we can offer more programs to our youth. Our golf course has had a struggle this month with play due to the weather, but they're working really hard to stay on track with their projections, and that's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Cipolla.
So our Lone Peak Public Safety District meeting is this Thursday, and so we'll have more input at that time. On the tech side, you know that I've been working for some time to try to improve our customer service. When residents have a complaint or an issue, that we'd have a good way for them to be able to dialogue with our staff, tell them what issue is bothering them or what complaint they have, and then be able to receive updates from that on a regular basis. So we've spent some time working with students on this issue. I've talked now to our city staff who handles the Public Works Department and that process, and come to the conclusion that we need to do a little more research. So we currently use a program called iWork that claims that it includes some functionality to do some of these things that we want. It's not clear whether it actually meets our needs or whether we just need to learn to use it better. So I'm going to get on the phone with the people who run that system and talk to them to see if we can use it better. Maybe there's something that it does that we don't know about. And if not, whether we can interface the software that we're building at BYU with their system to provide that extra functionality. So I'll hopefully have some additional reports on those lines at our next council meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I will also be attending the Lone Peak Public Safety Special Service District Board meeting on Thursday. We'll be talking about the budget, so imagine next time we get together, then we'll be able to speak a little bit more specifically about Lone Peak Public Safety budget. And we did have a Finance Committee meeting, and I thought it was a good constructive meeting, and we're moving closer to a point where we will approve next year's budget. And so I did encourage staff to try and have one more Finance Committee meeting before then in order to fine-tune or hash out any remaining issues before it comes to the council, so that the Finance Committee can present to the council something they feel really good about. So, Mrs. Reese.
I'm going to apologize in advance that mine's long. So the Planning Commission met and they had a great discussion on whether or not to allow the proposed congregate care facility to traverse the neighborhood retail portion of that commercial zone. They discussed the goals of doing so, and those goals were to create a park-like setting that can be accessed and enjoyed by the entire community, to move the development further from the homes to the south, and to allow for more commercial development in the southwest portion of that property. So the final motion that the Planning Commission made was to incorporate those goals and included conditions that the area must maximize open space to be visible and accessible to the community, and to require a one-to-one swap for commercial in that area. And so it was approved with one dissenting. There was some good feedback that when they come to council that they bring a visual of what that one-to-one swap would look like. So I believe that's why that's not on our agenda tonight. The Planning Commission also discussed rezoning some of the lots from the R120. The R120.
RR120,000
zone to RR115,000, and this would allow some of those lots to be subdivided and developed. However, it's anticipated that this would only create an additional 8 to 10 actual buildable lots. And so that was just a discussion item, not an action item. There's a map that Chandler has, and he can show you the exact lots that would be affected. It's mostly along the southern border, close to Canyon Road.
Yeah, it's the homes on Canyon Road on the southern border. That's exactly where it is.
And they also discussed allowing large animal rights for those lots as they currently do have those rights. And it would also make the current non-conforming lots into conforming lots because some of those lots that were annexed into Cedar Hills are not conforming. And the Planning Commission also agreed that their next meeting, which is next Tuesday, May 26, would be dedicated to reviewing the design guidelines. And then on Lakeview Trails, just because it's on the agenda today, I just wanted to discuss briefly what the Planning Commission had said in their motion. They did recommend approval of the Lakeview Trail Subdivision final plan, but contingent upon showing a stormwater drainage between lots 3 and 4 and parcel A and lot 1, fixing the pressurized irrigation line between lot 17 and 20 per Mr. Bunker's direction, showing the location of the sidewalk at the on the end of Bay Hill there. Adding building area on each lot, assigning addresses, correcting geotech study report, engineering and geotech review by the city engineer, and a letter of water rights conveyance. Like Mayor Geagy said, the Finance Committee met and discussed the upcoming 2016 budget, and no significant changes were made from our last council meeting. And then Family Festival Committee is working hard as Family Festival is a few weeks away, and all those details are available on the city website, but we hope to see everyone there.
Thank you. Mr. Crawley.
I missed the Finance Committee meeting. I had a medical emergency going on in the family, so I missed that. But I spent some time preparing for the discussion on golf course options. So that's been my focus this week.
Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to our scheduled items. Item number 10 is an action item on installation of sewer laterals to properties on 4000 West. And Mr. Bunker, you're presenting.
Mayor and Council, recently we have met with a resident who is in Pleasant Grove, who lives on 4000 West, Mrs. Day, and she's here tonight, with a request to connect onto a Cedar Hills sewer main. And her septic system has failed, and so she needs access to a sanitary sewer system. Our current city policy states that we would require a resident to boundary adjust into Cedar Hills to receive our services. And so there are several homes there that potentially would need that sewer service. There are other homes that have septic systems on that road. And so the city met with Mrs. Day and discussed some of those requirements and then also some improvements that would need to happen. And staff's proposal is that we would, as a city, we would extend a sewer lateral from the main to the property line, and then homeowners who wish to connect would go from their home or wherever their septic system is and then come to the property line to the lateral that is stubbed. And that within a certain time period that they would make application to Cedar Hills and to Pleasant Grove and make the boundary adjustment process to come into Cedar Hills, and then they would receive those utilities at resident rates. And so those are that's what we're discussing tonight. And Mrs. Day would like to give some comments if she could. Would you like to hear from her?
Sure. Okay.
Thanks, Dave. So my name is Gina Day, and I live at 4495 North, 900 West, Pleasant Grove. My house, my septic, has probably been there for 40-plus years. I moved out here from Linden about 7 years ago to enjoy the nice big lot that I have. But coming with that was the option of septic. Little did I know when I bought the house that they said, oh, those things last forever. That is not the case, as we found out. We've been without sewer now for about 10 days, so it's been pretty interesting farming out kids and trying to figure out how you're going to run water. So what I found out, I've been doing a lot, a little bit of research, and I found out that went to Cedar or Pleasant Grove City Council, is that there's six of us on this road who, over the last 30 plus years, some of us have been here longer than others, are on septic. Now, besides myself, we have another person whose septic system is also starting to fail and showing those signs. I've already met with everybody except for one. My next door neighbor's 91 and the other gentleman's 87. The 91-year-old, I wasn't able to catch up with him, but everybody was ecstatic to find out that Cedar Hills was even thinking about offering a lateral. There's been some heavy and hearts over the years and some bitter feelings going back and forth, but at the end of the day, I actually got one guy who was probably the most bitter that I could think of, actually said Cedar Hills cares. You got to be kidding me. They're even considering this. So very, very excited. Originally we talked. I said, okay, here's the deal. What if we did this? Would you be considering when you sell your property to have it switch over to Cedar Hills? And all but one, like I said, the guy said yes. The rest of them were waiting to see what the other neighbors were going to do. Myself and we will probably be joining Cedar Hills. We're just waiting on one little piece of information to do that. But other than that, we'd have to change all of our legal docs. So we're kind of excited to come across. So hopefully I'll become a new Cedar Hills resident with your guys' approval and we'll get going on this. But the good news is I've already met with Cindy Bailey. Yes, Cindy Bailey, that's her name. And Pleasant Grove City Council last week. And she actually had an SIA that they were going to roll the rest of us six of in. When I started digging into the numbers of how much that was going to cost and how much those were going to come up, they started realizing really quick that we were aware of what was happening. Now, when I started making my neighbors aware of that, some of them built in 1997, paid $225 to the city and said, here's our impact fees 20 years ago, hoping that Pleasant Grove was coming up the street. We may or may never see that. They did agree in the last city council meeting to have in 2 weeks to have a city neighborhood meeting to discuss the possibilities. So at this point, it's just a matter of time for the rest of us. There's six of us sitting out there kind of on our own little island with really no home. So giving this the proposal, and I can take that back to the rest of them. I talked to a few of them actually on my way out of the driveway tonight, and they said, if you guys can get this, we're on board. Let's do it right now. So they're very, very excited. And the other thing to our benefit, or Cedar Hills' benefit, is that Pleasant Grove water bills, our neighborhood started to jump. And we haven't even hit summer yet. So they brought that up in the city council meeting. I'm not sure where that actually ended up, but pressurized water irrigation right now is looking pretty good to them. So anyway, I would really just like a decision made sooner than later. I know that Cedar Hill or Pleasant Grove would let them out. Cindy was actually, I brought up the fact that I'd met with the mayor already. And she was ecstatic. She said, if you guys already have a solution for your six residents, fantastic. So I don't think that's an issue. And the thing I brought up today, if it's changed the subject slightly, is that we do have people behind us on the Wedgwood that have already tied into sewer via Pleasant Grove. However, their main connection is Cedar Hills. So it all flows into the Cedar Hills line. One of the things that I talked to Mayor Daniel about last week was, what about an intercity agreement? Which basically means for those people who are hardcore, diehard Pleasant Grove people who are refusing to leave, basically in the Cedar Hills area, we do an intercity agreement, which is once a quarter, you basically invoice Pleasant Grove. And so then Pleasant Grove would pay you back for the people who are tied in to that without making those people actually jump across to be Cedar Hills residents because they're already there. Happened to know one of them, their septic just failed, and they are now tying in on that Wedgwood line, so they ultimately will be dumping into that Cedar Hills section, but Wedgwood's owned by Pleasant Grove, so it kind of gets a little sticky. So anyway, just a thought you might want to think about, but I appreciate your time, and if we can get a decision tonight, that would be fantastic, because I'd really like to get moved back into my house. Thanks.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you very much. Council members, questions for Mr. Bunker or for Mrs. Day?
So we spoke about this during our work session, and I'm just going to reiterate the points that I brought up already, just so you can hear Ms. Day. So if there's something that we can do to help, I definitely want us to look at that. So these are the concerns that I brought up. The first one was that in the agreement, I don't see a time that it actually has an annexation period outlined. So we should have that specifically listed in the agreement. Secondly, I think we need to research what happens if Pleasant Grove says no. And the reason why I state that is because we have had instances where Pleasant Grove residents have wanted to annex into Cedar Hills, and Pleasant Grove has told them no. And then if we have people on our sewer system, then what? The third one is we have been told in the past, we have an instance right now with a Pleasant Grove resident who is connected to our sewer line and does not pay their bill and has not in years. And we've always been told that we cannot shut off their sewer access. So basically this resident is receiving free sewer services and has been for years. And so what happens if the bill doesn't get paid? And then lastly, Mr. Shaw had stated that there were some other changes that he would recommend in the agreement, and I would want those to be reviewed as well.
Very good. Mr. Sapala, you have any questions?
I have a question for Mrs. Day, actually. So I wonder if you might come back, because I just have a quick question for Mrs. Day.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to listen to you at the same time.
Yeah, that's okay.
Go ahead.
So one of the issues we've struggled with as a city is that the border between Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove is kind of Swiss cheese. It's difficult to tell from house to house.
Agreed.
Which house is in Cedar Hills and which is in Pleasant Grove, which for many purposes is okay, but when it comes to emergency services, that can be a real issue. So if somebody is calling and saying, hey, I have a terrible car accident right here on the street, they don't know whether they're in Cedar Hills or if they're in Pleasant Grove many times.
I learned that.
And it goes to a different location. It goes to Pleasant Grove services. If it's in Pleasant Grove, it goes to Utah Valley Dispatch.
American Fork, they haven't decided.
Yeah. We would hate to have an issue. They've had these in Salt Lake where somebody didn't get the life-saving services they needed because the call got messed up. So my question for you is, is that a concern for residents in your neighborhood?
We do have older residents, and I actually brought that up to a few of them because two of them are at the city council, and I said, do you know where your 911 services come from? So depending on which person I was listening to, they said, oh, well, we've got these guys right here, the ambulance is right here, but or the fire is right here, but they have these people on call, and it takes them 8 minutes to get there, and then they're coming to get you, and we're 4 minutes away, we can be anywhere in 4 minutes. Now, before I actually moved into this our house, we were remodeling, and I had the most embarrassing story. Really quick about it, but I actually had experienced this. I left my car and drive when it was snowing, and my driveway's like this. What happened was I ran into the house, came back just to see my car go across my driveway, hit a tree, down the embankment, across the street, and up another tree. I called 911, right? Well, my car is in someone's tree. My neighbors, that's how I met my neighbors for the first time. Honestly, it's the truth. And I said, where are you calling from? I gave him my address. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, we can't help you. So Pleasant Grove rerouted me to American Fork, then rerouted me back to Pleasant Grove, and it took a while to get there, so I do understand that. I do understand how that goes. Most of the residents, I don't think really, I think we're all in kind of not understanding how that all works. It's really a matter of not knowing and being educated, right? Because they see a fire department right next and they feel real safe about that. But I don't think they realize if they're not Cedar Hills that that's not going to be available to them. When I brought that up, light bulbs started going off. It really just is a matter of education. Now, I had planned on bringing whatever you guys had said back to my neighbors. They're thrilled. They're absolutely thrilled. And like I said, pressurized irrigation is very exciting to them. You do have some diehards who are probably not going to switch right away. But at the end of the day, I think they would. And when the house sells, for sure. I am ready to go anytime. So I've got a little pressure, a little urgency for me. But okay. Other than that, yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted you to understand our concerns.
Absolutely.
That, as far as inter-city agreements are nice in some cases. But in this case, if it results in an even worse patchwork of this house is in Cedar Hills because they decided to boundary adjust in. This next one said they want to stay, so they got an inter-city agreement. The next one back into Cedar Hills.
Right. Well, the problem is that exists right now, right? That's
really
where we live right now.
Yeah, we don't want to make that worse.
Right. Well, if anything, our goal here is to get more people onto Cedar Hills and less Pleasant Grove. Everybody north of the canal, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this is an incentive package to them saying, guess what, guys? You know the big bad people up on the hill that you said about all these people about Cedar Hills? Here's what they're willing to do for you. I can't believe it. Like softened hearts overnight. I deal on facts. I make my own opinion. So I got the whole story, got everything that I had questions to, and then I started to communicate back to these people who were pretty hard-headed about it, and their light bulbs were going off, and they're excited. So I think that the goal ultimately is this. If Pleasant Grove, let's say in 2 weeks, decides, okay, we're coming up the road, we'll come up next year, and some of these diehards are going to hold out for that. Well, guess what? How much is that going to cost them if they go under the SIA? Do they know? The next thing is, really, your $225 that you paid to Pleasant Grove 20 years ago, that impact fees were 20 years ago fees, not what they are here. So for them, they start thinking about this a little bit, right? So for them, this is a huge incentive. The sewer's right out in front of you. You get there when you can. If your septic fails, you got a backup. Plus, it's going to increase property values and pressurized water irrigation. So I think I've made a case for at least the six people I can help you out with that on my road. If that does help, I have a pretty good relationship with these guys. And like I said, a lot of them are older. Right now, they don't have the money to come. I mean, let's face it. It's a ton of money to dig up a sewer to get to the city. It just is. But some of these guys, you know, of course, they're going to be passing soon, unfortunately, and people are going to be replacing their house, and they're going to need that property value. And this is just another incentive to say, hey, Cedar Hills has our back. Let's go. Any other questions I can answer for you?
Any question for?
No, I think I have a question for David. So I just want to clarify, we have this non-participating subdivision fee on the contract. Do you have a sense of what that is going to be, or is that going to be zero?
My sense is that that will be zero. And so there's, I don't see why we would charge that fee.
Okay. And what is the amount of the sewer impact fee? That's the same thing we charge to normal residents who build a house and come into Cedar Hills.
That's right.
But do you have a sense of what amount that is?
Chandler, we looked that up. It was
$900.
Yeah.
You said
$938?
Nine.
$938. And then TSSD, I believe, is $2480 or something.
And we can't change that.
No, that's a pass-through. So when the sewer TSSD, when we tell them we hooked another unit on, We pay that. It's just a pass through.
So that's $2,400.
$2,480, I believe, is that number.
These are all one-time fees that will never recur again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a pass through. So.
Okay. I have a question for you, David, also. Yeah. The new laterals and proposed developments typically cost approximately $1,000 to $1,500. That's for us getting close enough for them to hook up to, right?
Yeah.
And how do we cover that cost?
So that would come out of our water sewer enterprise fund.
How would we cover it from the resident that's getting the service?
So our proposal, staff's proposal, is that the city would cover the cost to get from the main to the property line, uh-huh, and that the resident would cover the cost to go from their home or septic system to that property line.
Mm-hmm.
So they would just tell us where on the property line that lateral should be stubbed to, and we would only do the stub.
Do we make that up through fees over the years then? Is that what the rationale is, that we're paying for that? Is that something that would recover over years of time?
That we would probably do something similar for other residents to get to the property line.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be their responsibility to go from their home to the lateral.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions down here?
Nope.
Okay. Mr. Zappala, are you done?
I'm done with questions.
Okay. Then. It's not really time, Ken.
Wedgwood Drive population has changed significantly over the last few years, but the opportunities are better now than it ever has.
Thank you. Okay, I will take a motion.
I will make one. I'm just trying to get to that memo.
Okay.
Sorry, just give me 1 second. Okay, I move that we approve authorizing the execution of an agreement to allow a non-resident connection to a city utility with the following conditions. Number one, that the annexation period is clearly defined in the contract to be within a six-month period of time. Number two, that there are stipulations as what will happen if Pleasant Grove refuses disconnect from Pleasant Grove. Number three, what the city's recourse is if the sewer bill is not paid by the resident. And number four, pending legal review and any additional changes that Mr. Shaw may have.
Nicely done. Okay, I have a motion.
I will second that motion.
The motion's been seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Congratulations. Moving on. Item number 11, which is also an action item on plans for Lakeview Trail subdivision located approximately Canyon Road and Hillson and Hillside Zone. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Okay. Mayor and Council, what we have for us tonight are the final plans for the Lakeview Trails subdivision. This is located on Canyon Road, approximately 0100 North Canyon Road, just south of the city building. And as Councilmember Reese already mentioned, there was a number of items that the Planning Commission made as part requests the Planning Commission made as part of their motion last month. So let me just briefly go over those. There's a few minor changes to the plats that need to be brought up. And they're very good changes. We like them. One of them was the trail. There was a trail. Currently, there's the Bonneville Shoreline Trail that runs along the Metro Water easement. And between lots 3 and 4, there was shown an access to that trail for the subdivision. Now, the access to that trail was being shown at a very steep grade, much steeper than the city would like to see. It was being shown at about approximately 18%, I believe. It's a very steep trail access. They've moved the trail access to being between lots 5 and 6, which brings that grade from 18% down to 8%. So we are really appreciative of that. The drainage between lots 3 and 4, and this is something I'll address in a little bit further, but that's still a concern. If you look at the plats on page 6, the utility plan, the city has concerns about surface drainage when it's a swell that is carved into the ground, basically. There's a design for it, and it usually includes what's called riprap, the rock that is there to kind of guide the water where it needs to go. However, when it's on private property like that, it's very difficult for the city to ensure that or keep those open and keep those clear, because a lot of times people will landscape them and the city will miss that, and then your drainage swell is gone. And so, and that's, when that's part of the storm drain system, it can be very problematic when that 100-year event comes along. So there's some concerns about that. We'd like to see that rather than a surface swell, we'd rather see that being piped. Additionally, the plans show the storm drain pipes as being 12-inch PVC storm drain. City requires that that be at least 15 feet to meet the city standards. Sorry, 15 inches. 15 feet
would be a
very big
pipe.
Yeah. And then the PI line, you mentioned the PI line between lots 19 and 20, that has been corrected. They've also shown the buildable area on the lots, and that meets the PRD requirements. The PRD is the code that this section is being developed under. The geotech report. There were some concerns about the geotech report. These were addressed, and they're outlined on the plat. So if you were to look at the plat itself, there's references to the geotech report and certain conditions that need to be made on certain lots where there is some ambiguity. And let me go over those real fast. It says on the plat, it says, all recommendations of the geotechnical study dated December 8, 2014 shall be followed. These include but are not limited to the following. All cuts and fills over 3 feet on the landslide mass should be analyzed and evaluated prior to disturbing the existing slopes.
Chandler, I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? Is this on these plans that we have been...
Yes.
Which page are you looking at?
First page. Right, the cover sheet. It says that the grading fill between 5 feet and 10 feet being placed above the existing surface should be allowed to settle, be allowed to site a minimum of 3 weeks to allow settlement. So it goes through these steps that need to be taken, and specifically on lot, in the third provision there, it says once proposed locations for houses on lots 21 and 22 are determined, additional slope stability analysis will be performed on the proposed locations. And those lots are fairly large lots. They're about an acre and a half, so it's very difficult to pinpoint where the home is going to be located on those. And so that those two lots will require future study and observation by EarthTech.
So quickly on that, on the geotechnical study note, is that coming from civil science?
That is coming from EarthTech, but it's being placed on the civil science plans.
Is EarthTech the group that was here last time, well, 2 times ago, I think, to present along with
They listed a bunch
developers.
Of concerns.
Yeah, there was someone that was here that had several specific concerns about the property.
Mustang.
That was Mustang. Yeah.
So we submitted these plans to Mustang, and they had a couple concerns, but one of them was the buildable area. They were concerned about that, but that's actually being met. So their concerns were the buildable area. They also shared their concern about the surface drainage. Mm-hmm. They're not big fans of that. And finally, their main concern and staff's main concern, and it's the same concern that's shared with the Metro Water, is that the storm drain system there that's being that takes any storm drain event from the end of Bay Hill, the Bay Hill cul-de-sac, and sends that through the easement there. We want to make sure that that meets the 100-year event, like Mr. Windsor said, and any action we want to have be subject to an engineer's final review of the storm drain plan. We received a letter for water conveyance from Mr. Wilson today. We just need to make sure that that is also accurate. And then the last thing they did is they placed a street light at the end of Bay Hill cul-de-sac, as was requested by the Planning Commission. The one last concern that staff has, and I would invite comment from the Water District if they have anything to say about it, is the issue regarding lots 3 through 8. We've brought this up before, but it's the similar situation that we had up on Silver Lake, where the easement backs up onto a property. And what happened up on Silver Lake was the easement actually, the property lines actually encroached into the easement about 25 feet. And this, by encroaching onto the easement 25 feet, these residents were not allowed to put in. It made it difficult to put in fences, sheds, trampolines, swimming pools, really any sort of structure.
What was the easement for?
It's the Metro Water easement. It's about 100 feet wide, the aqueduct easement that goes through the city. So eventually what the city did was the city had worked with the aqueduct people to shift that easement off of the property, basically saying if you give these residents their 25 feet back with no easement, the city will give you 25 feet on the other side of the easement so that you can still have your 100-foot wide easement. And that alleviated some of those concerns. But staff's fear is that if you look at the plat right now, this same type of thing is happening, but rather than 25 feet, it's only 5 feet. But the problem is when fences come up or structures come up, it's very difficult to enforce that because it's not on a visible road. Additionally, I know Metro Water would have to enter into agreements with all 6 of those homes, so that creates a lot of work for them as well. So that's just something to consider as part of your motion. David, was there anything else you'd think of?
Questions?
I have a number of questions. First off, I asked for and got a copy of the geotech report that we asked to pay for last time we met, when preliminary was granted. We said we need a geotech study paid for by a separate company. Yep. And so I got a copy of that. And reading it, there's a lot of critical comments towards the original geotech study, saying they left this out, they didn't specify this and that. And so I just want to be sure that you've gone through that with a fine-tooth comb and all of those objections they noted have been met.
A lot of the issues that were raised in the report were simply issues of where to find it in the report. And I think that they've addressed most of those. Additionally, I thought I had this. There was an addendum filed, and I thought I threw it in my binder the last minute, but I don't seem to have it here with me. But the addendum addresses the report and calls out language and basically gives some provisions to the city that protect the city. Because what the original language the city didn't like, and the reviewer, the geotech review, did not like the language either. That language has changed. In addition to that, like I said, there were conditions that were added to the plat itself that protected the city, that allowed the city, that gave the developer, that gave any builder guidance on how to proceed by calling those things out specifically on the plat.
Okay, so for example, on page 2 of that report, it says the EarthTech report is supposed to provide information and engineering data specific enough to allow a peer review of the report. Cedar Hill should be provided a detailed soils report that will shift responsibility for failures in soil engineering to the creator of the report rather than state the required engineering will be undertaken at a later date. So has that been done? Have we got
this? We did receive soils and perk test from them, so that is part of the report. They did do a sieve analysis on the soils up there.
Okay.
So who has gone through the new geotech report and looked at all those concerns and address them, because I haven't seen the geotech report.
We met with EarthTech, we met with David and with TAP Engineering to go through all of the concerns and then have them issue an addendum, which was issued, and I don't have it with me. So
David, last time when we talked about this, then Adrian Juchow came and talked about how he'd had chute piers down into his home to stabilize the ground and whatnot. That was my biggest concern, is that things like that wouldn't happen. Are you comfortable that we've addressed all the issues with this, that those type of issues will not happen in the subdivision?
I know with Adrian's home, he's on the downhill side, mm-hmm. and I don't know that the inspection was as rigorous as it should have been, mm-hmm. when it came to putting his footing and foundation in. So all the homes on the downhill side had all that excess fill shoved on there, and that could be part of the problem on his home. So in the EarthTech report, it specifically identifies that lot by lot, EarthTech will be on site to give an assessment of every one of those lots. And so they put that clarification on the plat as well, whereas I know in the subdivision, that would have been, I think, J3, plat J3. That was not on that plat to have the extra geotechnical review.
Who hired EarthTech?
So Dan Wilson hired EarthTech.
Okay. Why wouldn't we have the group that we hired, Mustang, do that check instead of EarthTech?
We actually had TAP. Geomechanical review the geotech from EarthTech. So we had a peer-to-peer review.
Okay.
They specialized in geotechs, where Mustang didn't have that same specialization.
Oh, okay.
But one mm-hmm. of the reasons that we didn't call out specifically you will install piers on these homes is because we weren't sure that piers was the best measure to go. There's other mitigation measures to prevent slippage or your foundation from faulting. So we didn't want to call out a specific measure when another measure may have been a better way to go. So that's something that will be evaluated on a lot-to-lot basis during the development.
Not only that, but that would put, if the city were to come in and say, we want you to build a piano and it has to look exactly like this, then that puts the liability on the city if that piano doesn't play music. Mm-hmm. Whereas the onus is on the developer.
Okay.
We wanted to make sure that there was sufficient review of that geotech report to make sure that it addressed all of the issues.
And do we pay TAP Geotech? Do we pay the bill to them?
Yeah. That's
important to me that they're paid by us. Yeah. They're representing us when they do that peer review. So
TAP is us. Mm-hmm. EarthTech was the developer.
Okay, makes sense.
Okay, so the additional question I have for you, Chandler, is I want to be sure if we're going to make a motion that we've got all of the conditions listed.
Yeah, I have them listed. So let me know what you have.
So what I have is I have, number one, subject to review of storm drain plan so that it meets the requirements for a 100-year event.
Okay.
I have number two, the drainage between lots 3 and 4 needs to be changed so that it's piped.
Okay.
I have number three, the storm drain pipes need to be changed to 15-inch PVC.
Yeah.
And I have number four, the water layer conveyance needs to be finalized.
Okay.
Are there additional ones that I've missed?
Yeah. Let me add a couple. We want to show Metro Water District Salt Lake Sandy on the plat as a signature. They've asked to be a part of that, so we want to show them as being part of that. So that protects the developers as well. One other concern that the Metro Water had was that to ensure that what's being shown on the plat, the corridor center line, needs to be currently it's shown as it's a 100-foot wide easement, and it's being shown as 75 feet to the west and 25 feet to the east, when they're saying it's really closer to something like 71 feet to the west and 29 feet to the east. So we'll just need to make sure that that's accurate. That's not a big, huge deal. And then we'll want to verify the addresses that are listed on the plot as well. Just that those are subject to change based on review.
Okay, and what should we do about the 5-foot easement issue? Do we want to require that that gets signed off and transferred, or do we want to mandate that the lots are 5 feet smaller.
Well,
Mr. Wilson, I'm happy to hear from Mr. Wilson on how to deal with that issue, or any others we've mentioned.
I'm the developer, Dan Wilson. Mike Kittis and I are developing this property. Just wanted to make a couple points about that 5 foot issue before you guys voted on it. Last time, I'm a little naive here. I'm not a developer by trade, and last time I was in one of these meetings, the vote was taken before I had a chance to comment. Three reasons why we would like to fight for that 5 foot issue, that 5 foot over the line. One, the city code requires that because the trail there, you're not allowed to have a privacy fence. And so having lived on that trail for 10 years, you have this constant parade of people going on that trail, and it's a little annoying not to have privacy. That 5 foot strip will allow vegetation, which I know can only be 3 feet high, but because of the nature of the lots, that section is up in the air, and so 3 feet of vegetation gives you some privacy. So that 5 foot strip allows there to be some vegetation at the top of a rock wall. You'll notice the plans have at the back of those lots it terraces up because it's a hillside. And so the back of those lots has a set of rock wall terraces, and then it would have a 5 foot strip at the top, the 5 feet we're discussing right now, that you can plant vegetation and have your fence not over the easement, but have your non-privacy fence at the top of your rock wall. So the 5 foot, it's not a make or break thing, but it is an advantage to us in selling those lots. And it's an advantage to the people that live there. They can have some measure of privacy from that constant stream of bikes and hikers and four-wheelers going up and down there. Second issue that I'd like to bring up is, again, I'm not a developer by trade. I'm a school teacher. That 5 feet times 700 feet equals 3,500 square feet, which equals about $30,000 out of my pocket. Going rate for lots is about 10 bucks a square foot. We've already sold to Questar a piece for 10 bucks a square foot. That's the going rate. So it's literally $30,000 out of my pocket. I know that's neither here nor there. If it was a safety issue, I wouldn't put up a fight, but it's really more of a convenience issue. It's a matter of the convenience of warning these people you can't put your fence over the line, having an agreement with them, blah, blah, blah. And, I agree it is a bit of a headache for us. We will have to disclose to the buyers you can't put your fence 5 feet back. It has to be 5 feet forward. But it's only half a dozen lots. Third issue, I've heard, and I've only been to a few of these meetings, not that they're not exciting, but I haven't been to very many, and I've heard a number of discussions about owner and property rights. I feel like, as the owner of that property, I feel like I have the right to sell it, and that's probably my biggest argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
If the council were to allow the 5 feet to remain intact, I would just ask that there be some notation added to the plat to identify that to buyers, sellers, and future staff who are going to enforce any fence ordinance. Because that's the real issue, is enforcing it.
That was exactly my question. How do we be sure that anybody who owns that property in the future?
You make notation of it, same way you did in the geotech report. I mean, we're really not crazy about it. We really don't like the idea of it. But that's really the only way that you can ensure that, is to make a note on the plat, because that's what the zoning department, the planning department will look at when the plans come through.
And currently, if anybody wants to build a fence, does that have to go through the
building department? It goes through the code enforcement department, which is okay. The zoning department. So when that comes up, when a fence permit comes in, we do look at the plat. We do look at what easements are there.
Okay, so an alternative you mentioned is talking to the water district about shifting that 100-foot easement.
Well, there's no way to shift. There's no room to shift that.
Is there no shift in
there, it's, no it's case? Snug, 100 feet snug there. So there's really not that option.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's our other option then? If we can add a notation to the plat, or?
Say your property line ends at the beginning of the easement.
Okay.
You have any more questions?
I don't have any more questions. I think I may be ready for a motion, but I'm willing to see if anybody else has other questions.
I'll come back to you if you do. Mrs. Reese or Mr. Crawley?
I don't have any additional ones.
You're both good. Mm-hmm. So, I'll take a motion then. You can always come back and discuss later after a motion. If someone's willing to make a motion.
I guess I have one quick question, sorry.
What's that?
I just wanted to double check. David, you're comfortable we've covered all the issues that are important? I trust you a lot with these type of issues. That's why I'm asking.
I think that list, if it was contingent on that list, mm-hmm. including final engineering, because mm-hmm. We need to work through some of the storm drain issues, then I'm comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will entertain a motion now if someone would like to make it.
I move that we approve the final plans for the Lakeview Trails subdivision, subject to the following list of requirements. Number one, that it is subject to review of a storm drain plan that meets the requirements for a 100-year event. Number two, that the drainage between lots 3 and 4 be changed so that it is piped. Number three, that the storm drain pipes are indicated or changed to 15-inch PVC. Number four, that the water letter conveyance is finalized. Number five, that it shows Metro Water District Salt Lake Sandy as a signature on the plat. Number six, that the corridor shown as a 100-foot easement on the plat be accurate so that it shows 71 feet to the west and 29 feet to the east of the center line. Number seven, that the addresses are verified that are listed on the plat. Number eight, that a notation is added to the plat regarding the 5-foot easement so that future property owners as well as future staff and code enforcement are aware of that easement and that fences are built back of that 5-foot easement. And number nine, that it's subject to any final engineering.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Moving on. Item number 12, which is also an action item on an ordinance amending Title 10 regarding landscaping and xeriscaping. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Yeah. The Planning Commission met, it's been a couple months now, to discuss xeriscaping in the city as part of the efforts to promote water conservation. We had a meeting with, I believe, Councilmember Zappala and Councilmember Reese, Mayor Gigi, and Mr. Bunker were all there, where we talked about xeriscape in the city. Now, xeriscape is currently allowed in the city. We wanted to clarify a couple of the things that were concerning staff regarding that code, and I believe that we have addressed those with the Planning Commission. So if you look at the code 10.5.27, under the definition of the term landscaping, shall mean and include the installation, and it goes on to say, and it now lists what we're proposing is it will now list xeriscape as under the definition of landscaping. Additionally, when it talks about irrigation systems, we wanted to have that xeriscape areas shall be watered only using drip trickle irrigation systems or other similar systems used to reduce water consumption. And then finally, under the xeriscape code, the next section down, it says a landscaping method that defines it as a landscaping method that employs the use of drought tolerant plants and techniques in order to conserve water. Planning Commission had what I felt was a very good discussion on this. There's some cities that have proposed and have codified some more stringent measures regarding xeriscape, such as requiring a certified landscaper to be the one that designs any xeriscape areas. The Planning Commission felt that that might have been a little onerous, and they were not in support of that. But I feel like what we're proposing is great. I do have concerns with it, namely that if it's an effort to promote people to xeriscape in the city, it needs some other future measures from this body. With Cedar Hills being nearly developed, we're close to 90-95% built out. Most everyone in the city has a front lawn already. So it'd be asking a lot of people to rip out their current landscaping and put in xeriscape with there being no incentive. So other cities have done incentives. We've talked about those before, and I would just ask that if the city council really wanted to promote xeriscaping, that might be the way to go about doing it. But as far as this is concerned, we feel like this xeriscaping code is good, is a good start on that road.
The purpose of this is to make it sounds like to me, I just clarify other purposes if I'm missing the boat here, but it's to de-incentivize people just letting their yard go and calling it xeriscaping.
Yeah, that's specifically called out that native landscaping is not xeriscape.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, and it's to allow xeriscaping. I mean, we've always allowed it, but we've always also required a certain amount of your front yard be lawn or your parking strip be lawn, and this gives more flexibility if somebody wants to instead do the xeriscaping.
Yeah.
So, my question is, until we get to the point where we provide an incentive for homeowners to do this, can we at least set an example? Can we xeriscape our roundabouts and all of our parkway strips where grass is not needed because nobody's playing on it?
I think you can, and let me just give you the concerns that we've had. We've had conversations about this. This is something that I'm more than willing to bring to the Parks and Trails Committee and have a discussion. Currently, they are discussing a proposal to this body regarding a redesign of the roundabout on 4600 and Cedar Hills Drive. They'd like to see that redesigned and re-landscaped. But currently, as it stands, the current proposal, as is being discussed, does not include xeriscape. Now, xeriscape does not mean that it's maintenance-free. There still are drip-trickle systems that are involved. It doesn't mean that just because we're not mowing it, we're not paying for those landscaping costs. There actually might be an increase in landscaping costs with Wilkinson maintenance, just because it's really quick to mow something, but to actually get down and weed something takes a lot more time. So there could be an increase in cost, but you're right. The city should probably look at various areas where it could reduce its green space into something more drought tolerant.
Well, and I think it would be good for us to reach out to Wilkinson and find out if that's the case, because when I've talked to cities who are doing this, they're saying that their maintenance is actually decreasing. And the other thing that the Planning Commission brought up, and I liked the idea, when they were discussing xeriscaping, they discussed maybe having one of the roundabouts have different types of xeriscaping as a model for residents who wanted to know what it would even look like. And so it would be a good resource for people in the community to go there and see this section is this type or whatever the case is.
Yeah, they wanted to have, I think, plant names and just a list of just something to inform people
about education.
It. But like I said, it might be... I don't think if you pass this code, you're going to start seeing people dig up their lawns next week. I think they've got to have a reason for it.
I completely agree. And we did talk about incentives in Planning Commission and the fact that, like you said, no one's going to rip it up just for this. Some people may. Councilmember Zappal is a great example of someone who is currently redoing his lawn to be more water conscious. And there is new development that is coming in that would then have that as an option. And so I don't know how we do incentives. From a financial standpoint, we're just not in an area where we can.
Right.
Yeah,
no.
But at least this allows them the opportunity for anyone who's moving into the city, or if they want to make changes to their lawn, to be compliant with city code.
Yes, I would just say that if you want to see some traction on this, I think that's a discussion that needs to be had.
Just a comment from California: the Mormon Church, Los Angeles Temple, turned off their water on their lawn, 91,000 square feet. Dead lawn.
I saw that. Okay. Any other questions or comments from this side? Mm-hmm. Mr. Zappala, do you have any questions, comments?
No.
Okay. Someone like to make a motion? I will entertain that now.
I will. I move that we approve Ordinance 5-19-2015A, amending Title 10, Chapter 5, Section 27, regarding xeriscaping and updating the definition and requirements to allow for xeriscape options to be installed throughout the city in an effort to promote water conservation.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded by Mrs. Reese. Any further discussion? Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Moving on to item number 13, also an action item. It's a resolution authorizing water and sewer fund transfers. Mr. Lowe, go right ahead.
Okay. As was stated earlier, this proposal for enterprise fund transfers is so that the city can be in compliance with some new direction the state auditor gave all the cities and counties in the state, all the governmental entities, about transfers that may be taking place from the enterprise fund or services that were provided by enterprise funds to governmental funds and not showing a charge for that. So in the past, the city hasn't charged water and sewer for its open space and parks. And so what this proposes is that we start charging the general fund and the golf fund some water charges. We were charging the golf fund already pumping charges, but this adds to that some water charges. And so we came up to an estimate based on what we were charging Lone Peak High School in American Fork. And the charges for the general fund were $8,500, and the charges for the golf fund were $31,000. And the fiscal impact of this is neutral because the general fund and the golf fund were not being charged this in the past, and the transfers are just offsetting this new charge. And so none of the funds are better off or worse off than they were a year ago. Any questions?
So just to clarify, again, you're stating this is a move to comply with new guidance that we received from the state auditor, and really it adds a level of transparency to utilities that the city is using.
Right. Yeah, so these line items show under utility expense in the general fund under park maintenance, and they show up under utility expense in the golf fund. And then in the water sewer fund, they have new revenue for the services that they're charging, and then there's the transfers between the funds that offset them.
And I would just say, and I apologize, I forgot your last name already.
Mr. Hazelbaker.
Mr. Hazelbaker. The note from the Utah State Auditor is in our council packets, which is online if you'd like to look at that note as well. It's a letter that came from the auditor telling us how we have to comply. So that's available for residents to view as well.
I'll make a quick comment about that too, just for those that weren't in the work session. I was concerned that we were already charging the electrical bill fee for the golf course on one of the pumps. And so I thought if we're charging the average cost of water in addition to some of the additional fees, then we're double charging. And it was pointed out that there is an extra pumping station that's required for the golf course. So it may not be overkill to charge this additional amount plus the electrical fee on the main pump that goes to the golf course. So it may be a little bit extra, but it probably was undercharging if we didn't do this, is the impression that I've got. So.
Okay. Anything else, Cheryl?
No.
Okay. Council, any questions? Mr. Zappala, do you have any questions?
No.
Mrs. Reese?
No.
Mr. Crawley, any more comments?
No.
Mr. Hazelbaker, did that make sense? If it didn't, you're welcome to chat with him.
Oh, you said, okay. At another time offline.
Absolutely. You can talk with him offline. Mr. Sorensen, you're okay with that too?
I'm still thinking about it.
You're still thinking about it. Okay. I will entertain a motion. Someone would like to make it.
I would motion if I could pull up the... I don't see it right now.
It doesn't say that a motion is needed.
It's number 13?
Item number 13.
Oh, there it is.
Do we need a motion for this?
Oh, is it not a...
There's no written motion.
Oh, okay.
It says review action, but I think when you pass the final budget, that's kind of...
Oh, so is this just a discussion item?
It looks like it.
I think so. I should have...
It says it's an action item on the agenda. However, when I go into the packet, it does not have a motion listed.
Though I would imagine you can't really decide you're not going to comply with state law, so there's not really a need for review action.
Okay, so we're not needing a motion then. Move on to our next item then. Action item number 14, which is resolution regulating open fires and fireworks. Timely conversation.
Mayor and Council, as you know, we've had some
dry weather in the past. We haven't had dry weather in the recent past, but it is sure to come again. And with that, we will have some flammable material on the hillside, and we wanted to jump ahead of this sooner than later. Last year, we had the same discussion about limiting fireworks and open fires on the hillside east of Canyon Road. And although it doesn't appear that anything could dry out, it can and it will probably by July 4th when everybody wants to light off their fireworks. The chief, I did talk to him again today just to make sure nothing has changed. And he said, as of right now, it looks fine. But we don't know what's coming up in the next couple months. So the issue is, if we're going to restrict fireworks, we should let our residents know ahead of time so they're not out purchasing all kinds of aerials and then not be able to use them. So the recommendation is that we adopt a resolution specifying restrictions of fireworks and open fires, and that that we enforce that this upcoming fire season.
So, David, I have a question. I'm reading the resolution, and I thought at the last meeting we discussed that the restrictions would be no aerials on the east side of Canyon Road and no open fires on the east side of Canyon Road, but this resolution states a restriction of all fireworks citywide and open fires east of Canyon Road.
You know what? If you look at Section 1, there is a conflict here. So it should be east of Canyon Road.
Of all fireworks? Because originally it was just aerials when we talked last council meeting.
Let me look here.
So what we talked about was aerials are banned east of Canyon Road.
East of Canyon Road, yeah.
However, fireworks that are operated on the ground and they can be lit off just in the home in front of them and stay on the ground, those would be allowable, but they had a bucket of water or hose close by, and the restrictions can change between now and the 4th of July, the 24th of July.
Yeah, they could.
And then west of Canyon Road, then at this point, everything was legal.
Yeah.
But encourage people to go to Mesquite Park. Fire truck is going to be there and to light off things in the park. And also east of Canyon Road, I believe that open fires were not allowed either.
So if you look at the language in the resolution, it really should say a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, adopting specified restrictions of aerial fireworks and open fires east of Canyon Road.
Because people who live on the hill are very concerned down here that it can burn us up just like, in fact, more than the people up there.
Sure, we are too. And so that's why we encourage people to go to a park, Mesquite Park, which is over just across
but
the way.
But you're banning them, and you're allowing
these. From the canyon down, you are at this point, and things can change between now and then, but right now, those are the rules.
And that's what's been recommended by the fire chief.
That's right.
With the knowledge that those may become more strict. So if I'm understanding correctly, it was supposed to be no aerials, no open fires east of Canyon Road, but west of Canyon Road, there were no restrictions.
It's no restrictions as of right now.
Okay. Somebody like to make a motion on this?
Yes, I move that we approve Resolution 5-19-2015A, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, adopting specified restrictions of aerial fireworks and open fires east of Canyon Road, with amendments made to the resolution provided to the Council to state that we will be restricting fireworks so that there are no aerials on the east side of Canyon Road, and also restricting open fires so that there are no open fires on the east side of Canyon Road. Furthermore, that we would, as a city, encourage the use of Mesquite Park for fireworks for all residents with the fire department on site in case of issues.
I'll second that.
Okay. I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Not, let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the last item of the evening, which is discussion only. Discussion on golf course options. Mr. Crowley, are you wanting to lead out that discussion?
I do. I actually prepared a written statement. Is 5 minutes okay to take?
Okay. Do you have copies for us?
What'd you say?
Do you have copies for us?
I do.
Yep. Fantastic.
So I'm just going to read it. What? Oh, sorry.
one more.
Just one more. There we go. And
wait, do you guys want one? Actually, two more. You have it.
I do. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the golf course has been a subject of controversy in the city of Cedar Hills for over 10 years. It is appropriate and good for the city to have discussions over the golf course as, according to my estimates, $13,650,000 has been spent on the golf course since its inception. If we only count half of the community rec center, since part of it is a community rec center and part of it services the golf course, then the cost has been $12,150,000 through June 2014. For a city of our size with approximately 2,600 residences, the total cost from inception to June 2014 is nearly $5,000 per residence. This is a very significant cost and should be analyzed on a regular basis. Last year, we had a decision survey. In that survey, we found that 11% of residents surveyed said that their first order of business would be that they would close the golf course down if they were mayor for a day. The only answer that got a larger response than this was regarding the commercial development south of Walmart, as that was a hot discussion item at the time of the survey. We owe it to the residents to make sure that we analyze all options regarding the golf course going forward. I don't have a lot of answers at this point about what the best solutions are, but I would propose a short list of options that we currently have as follows. Maintain the status quo, convert the golf course to parks, cemetery, soccer fields, dog park, etc. Develop and sell the land, let the golf course go back to native. Number five, I should have numbered these as I went, but number five, sell the golf course to a group that wants to operate the golf course, or six, a combination of the above. I'm sure there's other options. I don't have my mind made up regarding any of these ideas being superior to any of the other ideas. However, all of these ideas come with challenges to overcome and costs to the city. The overall goal in my mind is to find the solution that serves the residents best for the investment. I would suggest the business formula return on investment, adjusted to relate more to the city. The formula could be, or would be, 10-year project cost divided by average number of residents that use the service at least once a month or 12 times per year. For the golf course, if I take $11,800,000, which is the first 10-year expenditure, less $1.5 million of the cost of the community rec center, or half that cost, and divide that by 50 regular users of the golf course, I get one happy resident for every $236,000 spent. I was told by several in the city that we have about 30 residents that golf regularly throughout the golf season. So in this analysis, I bumped it up to 50 to make sure that I'm not understating that the number of regular golfers. Let's face it, we are in the golf business. We need to think like business people regarding the golf course. In business, there are opportunity costs and sunk costs. In business, you don't make decisions looking backwards, but rather looking forwards. Opportunity costs relate to what you could do other than your current plans. You consider what benefits you would forego by choosing one choice over another. What residents would we neglect to serve if we keep the status quo? The other cost that we must consider is sunk costs. We have spent upwards of $7 million developing the golf course that we cannot get back. This should not be part of the equation on our future decisions. This means that the debt that we are servicing should not be part of the equation going forward, as that debt will need to be paid regardless of what choices we make with the golf course. The golf course will not cost as much to maintain over the next 10 years as it cost to build originally. I would estimate that over the next 10 years, the additional cash requirements would be between $2 million and $4 million. If we use $3 million as the cost and divide that by 50 regular users, we would get $150,000 per regular user, which is less than the calculation of $236,000 per regular user for the first 10 years. There are other considerations rather than just cost and utility considerations, such as aesthetics and keeping city commitments. About 29% of the homes in our city were built in conjunction with the development of the golf course. It is very important that the city consider the desires of those nearby the golf course that would be affected by any changes that could be made. Following are some additional considerations that need to be part of the discussion. The first 10 holes are in a floodplain and would therefore have to be planned carefully regarding what could be done with the acreage in the floodplain. We are currently paying an outside group, Wilkinson's, $3,351 yearly per acre to maintain our parks. This includes maintaining sprinklers, tree trimming, pest control, mowing, and fertilizing. Any decision that requires maintaining green space, other than golf course green space, will need a similar rate allocated to the cost. We have 65 acres of golf course irrigated and manicured and 115 acres overall. This means a little under one half of the golf course land has native foliage currently. Also, we are considering spending $300,000 on a golf maintenance shed soon. If the city decided on an option rather than the status quo, this would be $300,000 of potential savings. The city has been planning on buying property east of Deerfield Elementary for approximately $1.8 million for the land, plus attorney's fees, as there is currently a dispute regarding this purchase. This money could be saved if the floodplain areas were used for soccer fields and baseball fields. The original HOA agreement with Cedar Hills allows for 750 residences in the area covered by the golf course and surrounding developments. Currently, 728 residences have been built, leaving only 22 remaining per the agreement. This agreement needs to be analyzed by our attorney. Seven, if an alternative plan to maintain the status quo uses more or less irrigation water than our current plan, this could affect the need to spend $2 million on a metering system. There are many other considerations that will come to light as we discuss this further. My goal is to present an alternative to the status quo for the golf course over the next few council meetings with the help of all willing parties. I would suggest that we would present the best alternative to the status quo that we can come up with, and if it looks like it's worthy of additional consideration, we move forward. If the best plan is clearly inferior to maintaining the status quo, then we communicate that to the residents, help resolve concerns regarding the golf course, and communicate that the best option for the city is to stay the course with the golf course. Although this will cause some short-term conflict and discussion, we need to keep the discussion civil, intellectually honest, and unbiased by past circumstances. I hope that through this exercise we'll have more oneness as a city and more of a spirit of cooperation going forward with less conflict. So my goal in bringing it up is that we all look at the options, all get on the same page, make sure that we're all, and never get everyone on the same page, but make sure that at least we as a city have looked at all options and we have determined that what we're doing is the best option after having a very good look, an honest look at all the different options with the golf course. And I think by doing that, we'll resolve a lot of the concerns that the city residents have with it.
So I don't have a problem looking at options for golf courses or anything else. How often are you recommending that we do this?
I think I have never seen an analysis to date that's really thorough about different options we could do. So having been into it about $13 million in 10 years and not having looked thoroughly in a way that I can see, I as a city council person have never seen that kind of analysis done or presented to me. So I would say that doing it once is really important with a really honest look at it. If it's very clear that there's a clear resolution to 75-80% of the residents after this analysis is done, then I would say we don't need to look at it for a long time unless something changes.
How long is a long time?
I'd say 5 years.
5 years.
Mm-hmm. See, I'd say at least every 5 years we should analyze things and make sure that we're on the right path. Yeah. Because this is the largest expenditure we have as a city.
True. It is. Mm-hmm. And so, as I mentioned, I don't have a problem with that. I have had probably I can count on one hand the number of residents that have asked me to do something like this. Uh-huh. So you have, Mr. Cromar has, and probably a couple others. But I've had many, many residents who have come to me and said, we never really knew the situation with the golf course was. Mm-hmm. Thank you for making it clear. And so I have had many residents that have said, we understand now that we've been subsidizing the golf course since the beginning. Thank you. Work towards making it better, you know, if you can. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to do. So
good.
What I'm concerned about is every 5 years or so, this will be brought up again and again and again, and it's never going to go away. Yet as you mentioned at the beginning of your piece, that it's been a highly divisive issue.
Right.
If you keep bringing it up every 5 years, it will continue to do so, even though, as I mentioned, the number of residents that have come to me saying do something different is probably five. two of which are in this room. No one else has. So, but if it helps clarify things.
He's became your sixth member.
There's actually a large number of people.
I'm sure there are. Listening. I'm sure there are, Mr. Cromer. I'm sure there are.
So, Rob, can I give you some specific feedback?
Absolutely.
On the document?
Yes.
Okay. So, first paragraph. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the breakdown of the costs and how you allocated the $13.6 million or the $12.1 million to the golf course. In my conversations with staff, I understood that some of the costs for the construction of the golf course went towards constructing our PI system as well. And so I'd like to be sure that that is accounted for properly.
It's off of the financials of the golf course directly. These are taking the city. Oh, I should speak in the microphone. These are taking the city audited financial statements and using their fixed assets that they've allocated to the golf course. So I'm not doing any funky accounting or anything. I'm just taking the financials that the city has had audited and using their numbers.
So does that not include costs for the PI system, David?
I would have to look at that
okay.
and see what was allocated that way.
So we should double check.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One, two, three, fourth paragraph, where you talk about a formula similar to an ROI formula.
Yes.
And you're dividing the amount we've spent on the golf course by 50 regular uses of the golf course. Mm-hmm. And my concern there is that although those may be the people who directly use the golf course, it's not equivalent to the number of people that benefit or are made happy by the golf course. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, the way that golf course was put in was trading that open space in return for smaller lots in the Cedars. And so that is the open space for the Cedars. Instead of having a backyard, they have many of these homes that sit on large areas of open space that are a golf course, which they obviously made that choice that they prefer to look at that than to have a bigger yard where their kids can run around. But so I'd want to be dividing by the number of people who have lots that benefit from the golf course. I'd want to include people who walk through the trail system, which much of that goes past the golf course and includes open space. If you really want an accurate formula to divide by the number of people who benefit, it's not just only those who are golfers. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. The what I would propose, though, is that you aren't actually allowed to go and have a picnic over there without, you know, or to actually use the golf course without paying, whereas if it was a park, you know, you can have your kids run out there and kick a soccer ball and, you know.
Certainly a different benefit calculation from a park.
So I'm just looking at people that directly use it.
So we could have a benefit calculation on two ends of the spectrum. One where only the people who directly use the facility,
right?
And one where anybody who derives some ancillary benefit from it, right? Even with a park, I may live across the street from the park and never go in it, but I have the benefits of having that open space, and it's certainly the property value of having the open space right across the street. And so somewhere in there ought to be some consideration. Maybe you need two formulas, direct and one for indirect, but you ought to account for the fact that it has some value to our community other than the people who actually golf there.
Right. That makes
sense. So when shortly after I was appointed mayor, I created a golf course financial advisory committee, and I put you on it.
Right.
And you even said how thorough it was. So if the council wants to do this analysis, would you want the Golf Course Financial Advisory Committee to be reconstituted and do the analysis with you?
I'd rather that one person on the city council join me just as a second set of eyes to do it. An analysis and make sure that it's not biased in any way. So
I think I think in order to make sure it's not biased, the Golf Course Financial Advisory Committee, that's their purpose.
The only problem I had with that is it was comprised of maybe 8 out of the 10 people were people that specifically use the golf course were in that group of maybe 30 that use the golf course.
That's not true.
It seemed like heavily...
That's not at all true.
Oh, okay.
And so the golf course committee made up of a CFO who's not a golfer and a couple of CEOs, one of which is a golfer. Probably both of those guys are golfers. And the rest I don't think golf at all. And you even said how authentic, how honest, how great of a job this committee did.
I think we did really well.
Made up of residents. So
yeah, I agree. We did really well with that. So I would just make sure that there's at least the same equal number of non-golfers as golfers on that committee.
I think we already have that.
Okay.
And I think you know that. And so I would think that's the best way to keep the analysis honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I've mentioned to you and other people many times, I think this is a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way to solve this politically is the people that want to shut it down, and I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not a big golfer, so I don't have a dog in this fight. I've just looked at the numbers, and I think it's difficult to do what you want to do. Be that as it may, then because I think this is a political issue, those that want to go down that route, they ought to. They ought to do what has never been done in the city, which is they need to run for office and say, I'm so-and-so, I want to shut down the golf course, who's with me?
Mm-hmm.
That's the solution.
I think that I'd like to have a real thorough analysis before we get to that. Actually, I'd like to do it really quick, at least a first glance analysis, because we're going to be spending $300,000 on the golf course really soon. I'd rather kind of have a quick analysis and see if there's any other options more quickly. That's my concern with getting a committee together. I think it'll make it go out 3 or 4 months, and I don't think anyone wants to wait on the maintenance shed 3 or 4 months.
This argument's been going on for 10 years.
True.
I don't think that there's a timeline on it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the people want to do this ought to have their courage of their convictions and stand up at election time and say, I want to do this. Who's with me?
I'm not sure anyone that is really wanting to run for office and say, and honestly, I'm the only one that's bringing this up right now. So I don't know who you're suggesting do that, because I'm not going to run for office for at least 2 or 3 years.
We're kind of going in circles here. I don't have a problem with doing this analysis. I just want it to be done right.
Okay.
And I would prefer that it not be brought up every 5 years in order to stir up emotions with people who may not want it shut down and give false hopes to maybe those that do.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think you're missing my intent, because I actually think that
I think you wrote some really good things here. I'm not sure that I'm with you on all of your math, but I'll look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a problem with doing some analysis. I just hope at the end of the day, whatever that analysis says, I know I will stick with it.
Uh-huh.
I hope you'll stick with it. And then, you know, not 3 years later or 5 years later, come back and say, I really didn't like the analysis. I want to do it again.
Right. Well, I don't want to drag it out through a committee, honestly. I'd rather work on it. Maybe, actually, I wouldn't mind a committee if some preliminary analysis showed that it was worth looking at. So I'd rather do some preliminary analysis before we formed a committee with another city council member and make sure it's even worth forming a committee.
The committee already exists. It was never discontinued.
That's true.
So all I need to do is tell them we need them to come back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to make the analysis honest, then that's what I would recommend that we do.
Okay. So you think it's worthy of bringing the committee together right now before we do some initial analysis on it?
Do I think it's what?
Worthy of bringing the committee together now before we kind of have a couple city council members get together?
If you're ready to start your analysis, then yes.
Hmm. I would like to have another city council member kind of just brainstorm with me and think through some of the cost and benefit before I'm ready to say it's time to pull together the whole committee. To think of if there are any options that do look like they're viable. And then if we do feel like it's worth looking at, then pull the committee together with you know, one or two really solid options against keeping it at status quo, so that it's a really directed committee looking at, you know, two options or three options and saying, which one's better?
I'm fine with that.
Okay. And is there any council members here that would like to just kind of look at it with me? How do you two? Would either of you like to kind of be a second set of eyes?
I think Mr. Geddes had an interest in it.
He might. We'll have to ask him when he's back.
I currently have 7 council assignments. My plate is full.
Your plate is full. And I know you have a lot.
My plate is full, and I'm going out of town for a couple of weeks, and so I worry.
I would suggest you take Mr.
I don't mind giving feedback if you want to send me something.
I would suggest you take
Mr. feedback.
If you want to have another council member, I would suggest you take Mr. Geddes.
Okay.
And then keep the rest of us in the loop.
Yep, absolutely.
Very good. That's it, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't get a chance.
You want more?
I was in the middle.
I haven't even said anything yet.
Okay, fire away.
I come at this from never having golfed a day in my life.
I do think that there is some merit to having the Golf Course Finance Advisory Committee involved, just because I think that whatever recommendation made is going to hold more weight if it comes from a group of people instead of from one person. And we've had lots of committees, Founding Festival Committee, Water Conservation Committee, and I, for me as a council member, I feel that when we have residents who are not elected officials involved in the process, whatever they come up with at the end holds a lot more weight with me. So I would actually like to see them involved. And I have no problem with you reviewing this again. I do think it's important, and you probably already know this, but I just didn't see this in here, that you identify and talk to legal about the bank covenants with regards to our bond, because I've heard talk that changing the golf course into something else makes that bond callable immediately, which obviously we do not have the money to do so. So legal needs to be involved in understanding the bank covenants and how changing the property into something else would affect that bond. I think there needs to be identification of the fact that a big chunk of the golf course property is located in the city of Highland. And as we've seen, they were unwilling to give us even a small section for the maintenance shed. So I think discussing the fact that the property in Highland is not going to be in our control as far as developing, it needs to be addressed. There needs to be a very detailed cost for what it would be to reconfigure for fields and parking. I know you mentioned that there's the land east of Deerfield Elementary, but the golf course as is couldn't be used for soccer fields or any playground, really. It would have to be completely reconfigured, parking added, et cetera. There needs to be the cost for moving all of the PI ponds off of the golf course and having retention basins located somewhere else. And then I would also like to see legal look at the development agreement with the Cedars HOA, because I believe that the open space was part of that, was part of the covenants made with that development, and we have to follow through with those covenants as well.
Good comments.
Oh, and lastly, Becky Tejero had done a basic analysis on what it would cost to maintain that area if it was park space, and I think it would be good to pull that as well.
Great.
Is that it, Mr. Tracy?
Yes.
Mr. Zappala.
You stole nearly all the comments I was going to make.
Sorry.
But I have one additional one. So just to echo what Jenny said, where you said this means that the debt we are servicing should not be the part of the equation going forward.
Yes.
Absolutely has to be because of the covenants that are on that debt. So
I mean the cost.
Though. I know you meant as far as a sunk cost.
Right.
Totally get that sunk cost thing, but definitely needs to weigh in as part of where we can go.
We have to make sure that we are doing things legally. Yep.
Yeah, and as Jenny mentioned, a lot of the area you're saying, one of the possibilities would be to turn that into ball fields, soccer fields. That's in Highland City, and they just won't let it happen.
Are you sure about that? Because I've talked to some of their city
development
council.
That is next to the course. Those residents absolutely will be on fire if they think that's being changed.
Gotcha.
That's what ensures the value of their homes.
Although, does a park reduce the value as opposed to a golf course?
Yeah, golf courses are premium.
Okay.
Because there's not as many people that use them. So it's mostly a few people wandering by being well-behaved as opposed to large people congregating, large numbers of people congregating in a park.
Gotcha.
Finally, so second to last paragraph, where you say, I would suggest that we present the best alternative to the status quo. Mm-hmm. What I would hope that you would present is the cost analysis for every option you consider. Mm-hmm. So that if you're going to collect all that data, you should share all that data with everybody and say, well, I considered these six options, mm-hmm. and five of them are terrible for the city. We ought to know that, if that's what you
conclude. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts, comments? I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
You guys want
to
stay?
Second. Just to be funny, I was holding back, but I will second.
Are you going to second it?
He did.
He did. Okay. I have a motion that's been seconded by Mr. Crawley. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.